Welcome everybody to today's episode of the Great Birth Rebellion podcast, where we grapple with current research and historical knowledge to help you get the best out of your pregnancy, birth, and postpartum journey. My name is Dr. Melanie Jackson at Melanie the Midwife. I'm a clinical and research midwife with my PhD, which is why I send out a weekly email which contains the resources that we use to create every single Great Birth Rebellion episode. You can join the podcast mailing list at melaniethemidwife.com. Our Great Birth Rebellion premium members also get access to podcast transcripts, additional resources, the Ask Mel a Question button, and an exclusive monthly Ask Me Anything episode where I answer listener questions. That said, let's get into it. Welcome to today's episode of the Great Birth Rebellion. It's Melanie Jackson here with you, and today I'm going to share some information and tips for caring for late preterm babies. So that's babies who are born between 34 and 36 weeks and 6 days. Once they turn 37 weeks, they're no longer late preterm babies. So these babies are labeled as late preterms because they don't have the same care needs as early preterm babies, so babies born before 34 weeks, but they also need different care than babies that are full term from 37 weeks onwards. And I myself gave birth to my late preterm baby at home. So he was 36 weeks and 2 days. By the time he was born, it was a bit of a long labor. He was born 2.3 kilos, which is considered small for a baby, and I chose to care for him at home. So today I'll share from my experience. As always, I'll also be providing evidence-based information about caring for these little babes, both when they're in or out of hospital. And I want to highlight today that my skill and understanding of this comes from my midwifery experience and my personal experience and current evidence that I've used to create this episode. So I'm not a pediatrician, and I can't speak from that perspective. And the needs of early preterm babies are different depending on reasons for which they were, the reasons they were born early and how well they adapt to extrauterine life, how well they adapt to being out of their mother's bodies. So today's episode will mostly be giving information with reference to uncomplicated preterm births. So if your preterm birth was complicated by a medical condition for yourself or your baby, some of these things will be applicable, but maybe not all of them. So today I'll start by explaining some of the reasons a baby might be born early and how that might change care decisions and planning. And I'll talk about the immediate needs of an early or a late preterm baby. And then in the days following, they have some different needs as well. I'll talk about the care you might expect for your preterm babe if they're being cared for in hospital, and then also offer some alternative options that might not be offered to you in hospital, but that are evidence-based. And as we go, I'll be able to give you examples of what I did for my little baby at home as I cared for him there, and you might find some helpful strategies in that story. All right, let's do it. So firstly, what is a late preterm baby? So a late preterm baby is a baby that's born, as I said, between 34 and 36 weeks and 6 days of gestation. So 37 weeks is considered full term, but there is also newer research that's suggesting that we reclassify 39 weeks as full term, given the amount of brain development that occurs between 37 and 39 weeks in utero. It's a topic for another day, but certainly there's researchers pushing for the full-term gestational age to be changed to 39 weeks. Part of the driver for that is that there is a new habit from clinicians to bring babies out earlier and earlier through induction and cesarean section. And so the call is for that to not happen until babies are 39 weeks. And that's part of the reason why they're looking at reclassifying what full-term is. But again, for another day. So late preterm babies are classified as late preterm and not just preterm, because very early preterm babies need different care, but these late preterm babies, they often adapt to life really well and don't need specialist neonatal care within a special care newborn unit or neonatal intensive care. Whereas early preterm babies born before 34 weeks are routinely admitted to special care nurseries and sometimes neonatal intensive care. That's not the case with late preterm babies. So if your baby is born with a weight also that's less than 2.5 kilos or 2,500 grams, or if you work in pounds, it's about 5 pounds, 8 ounces. And this itself could trigger an immediate admission to a special care unit and that your baby might not come to the postnatal ward. But we'll chat through this episode about if this is actually necessary. And as I said, my little guy was born 2.3 kilos, so underneath that threshold, and did pretty well at home. So I have found a paper about the origins of this cutoff, this 2.5 kilo cutoff. Going to be no surprise to know that a fella dreamed up the number in the early 19th century, and we've been using it ever since without really asking why. But we will answer that later on in the episode. But in many facilities, these late preterm babies, they're kept with their mamas on the postnatal ward and they're cared for by their parents and the midwives there. And if they experience a complication as a result of being preterm, then they can escalate to higher acuity care. But in many hospitals, this only happens if the baby doesn't adapt well to life. If the baby's well, they'll often be discharged within a few days and come home with you, and then you'll be caring for them at home. So this information in today's episode is also really helpful for parents whose early preterm babies have actually adapted well, and then they've been discharged from hospital, still not full term yet. And so if you're taking home your late preterm baby and wondering what kind of extra care or extra special care your baby might need, this episode is also going to be helpful for you. So before talking about how to care for a late preterm baby, let's just quickly go over why your baby or why babies can be born early. So there can be pathological and non-pathological reasons for a baby being born early, like there could just be nothing wrong, or it could be because there is something wrong. And some reasons are just a mystery. Why was that baby born early? Sometimes we just can't tell you. So basically, your baby might be unexpectedly born early and no one can give you an exact reason why. Maybe your baby was just ready. Maybe that's what your body always does. Maybe your due date wasn't estimated correctly and you're actually full term. So there's not really a clinically identifiable reason. It just happened. Sometimes your waters just break and you go into labor, or labor starts earlier than you're expecting. So in these situations, everyone seems otherwise well and healthy. You and your baby seem otherwise well and healthy. You've just gone into labor. And also twins can naturally come earlier than full term. Also, so if you're carrying multiple babies, you might also be expecting an earlier birth. Not necessarily pathological, it's just time for them to be born. Now, the pathological reasons for why your baby might be born early, and the reason your baby is born early is important when you're considering what the aftercare your baby might need and what aftercare you might need. So with babies who are just unexpectedly born early for no particular reason, and that everybody is well, then the care strategy could be a little bit different. But sometimes babies are born early because there's a medical condition for the mother. So for example, urinary tract infections or uterine infections can sometimes trigger preterm labor. And sometimes women with uncontrolled diabetes can go into early labor. Or if the woman has a condition such as preeclampsia that arises, and the baby needs to be born early to prevent that from progressing. So in these circumstances where the mother's health and condition is the reason for the baby being born early, we might not expect the baby to adapt as well to being born early because the birth timing was instigated by the needs of the mother rather than the baby deciding that it was just time to be born. But often these babies are born well because they were well in utero, but they had to be born early so that their mum could stay well. And that is just as important as the baby staying well. And the other reason why a baby might be born early is because there's a condition, a problem with the baby or in the placenta. And if this is the case, if your baby's born because it's unwell and the baby's triggered labor, or the baby's condition has caused you to make a decision to bring labor on early, then this is probably the more chance that your baby is coming out and has more complex health needs, so might not adapt like other preterm babies. The other reason why your baby is born too early, and this is not me poo-pooing modern maternity care, this is actually evidence-based, is we're having a big problem with practitioner-led birth timing that's too early. There's an increasing use of induction of labor and elective cesarean section before 37 weeks. And this, again, this is not just me saying it. The preterm birth rate is going up, and the research itself cites the practice of early induction and planned cesareans as one reason for the rise. So it is what it is. Not saying this is my opinion. That's just what we're seeing. All right, so let's jump into the immediate post-birth needs of a late preterm baby. But before I do that, I want to first offer some suggestions that you can apply during birth to help your baby be born in the best condition that it can be. So there are things that we can do during labor to improve the condition of the baby once it's born. And given that your preterm babe might already have some challenges when it's born, if you can do things during your labor to reduce any additional complications, that's going to be a good thing. So I'm actually working on an episode that focuses completely on strategies to prevent distress for babies during labor. So I'm only going to give a brief rundown here because there's going to be a full episode on this, and this will apply to full-term babies as well. I mean, it applies to all babies, but I just want to give you a little snippet of that in this episode, because I do think that if you can keep your baby as well as possible during labor, that's going to set them up well for their transition after birth into extrauterine life. So things that we know improve the condition of a baby in labor are if you're using active birth positioning, where you are upright or side lying when you're giving birth and not laying down on your back or leaning back during labor. And that's the same during labor and birth. Movement in labor and forward leaning positions seem to optimize not only the baby's well-being and condition. So, and the other thing that movement and activity during labor is that they encourage movement of your baby down and into your pelvis into more ideal positions. And this can reduce the stress on the baby during birth. So in order to move, though, and be in a position, an active and upright position for your birth, is you ideally would need to avoid an epidural, because this reduces your mobility options. If you do have an epidural, you can improve your chances of a less stressful birth for your baby by being in a side-lying position and then flipping from side to side every sort of 20 minutes to half an hour with your epidural, and you can put a peanut ball in between your knees to try and optimize birth positioning for the baby while working with that epidural. The other thing you can do is avoid medications during labor like sedatives, pethidine and morphine, because these will interrupt the baby's basic bodily processes like breathing and the ability to feed once it's born. So babies born with these medications on board, they're just not as sharp and ready for life. And that can be an additional burden for preterm babies who might already be having trouble with this just by the fact that they're preterm. The next thing you can do is when it comes time to push out your babe, breathing your baby down and going only with your natural urges. So when you feel the urge to bear down and push your baby out, and your body takes over on that process. And B and I gave lots of detail. We did a whole episode on this in episode 14, and it's called Pushing Out Your Baby. So long breath holding pushes where your care provider is yelling at you, push, 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 and you're holding your breath. These induce a Valsalva response, and they reduce oxygen transfer to your baby. And we know that by babies' heart rates that they actually feel more distress or more stress with these extended pushing periods than if you just go with your natural urges, which tend to be not as aggressive, if I was going to put a word to it. At the best of times, even a full-term labor and birth, I don't recommend this type of pushing, so especially not for a preterm baby. And If you can, if your waters haven't already broken by themselves, keeping the waters intact and not allowing anyone to break them artificially is going to give your preterm baby, hopefully, statistically, a less stressful labor experience. So as I said, there'll be a whole episode on keeping your baby vigorous and well during labor, and I'll expand on those, but these are a few things that I just wanted to offer you now. So now let's go through what are the immediate post-birth needs of your late preterm baby. That is a big mouthful. Basically, straight after the birth, what does your late preterm baby need? So for any baby, the three things that need to stay in check together are their need for oxygen and respiration, for thermoregulation, which is temperature management, and normal blood sugar levels. So if one of these three is not working well, the others will soon suffer. So the basic rule with babies, with all babies, but particularly these late preterm babies and early preterm babies as well. So remember, warm, pink, and sweet. Warm referring to temperature management. Pink refers to oxygenation and respiration. So are they breathing properly? And sweet relates to the feeding and blood sugar levels. So late preterm babies, when you're caring for them, think about warm, pink, and sweet. Now, full-term babies have a greater capacity to manage these things usually without a fuss because they're born with adequate fat stores and energy and fluid stores, and their bodily functions, their lungs and reflexes are more mature. But with preterm babies, the parents need to focus on adding external factors or facilitating this externally. You can't always rely on your preterm baby to be able to do this themselves. So warm, pink, and sweet is the strategy. Anytime you're thinking of what special care does my late preterm baby need, warm, pink, and sweet. So initially, the moment your baby is born, comes out, the first need is adequate oxygenation and respiration. And this can sometimes be challenging for early babies because lung maturation, the full maturity of the lungs, might not be complete. The good news is that labor does have the action of finishing off some of the lung maturity. So if your preterm baby's been born as a result of you having contractions, then that bodes well for your baby's respiratory efforts. And less so if you've needed to have a cesarean section without labor, this might become a little bit more of an issue for your preterm babe. The other reason that this is a challenge to establish adequate oxygenation and respiration is that some practitioners are nervous with preterm births and they'll assume that they need attention. And some might be in the habit of rapidly cutting and clamping the cord and taking the baby off to the resuscitation trolley for a pediatric check. And for some people, this is just what is considered routine care for an early preterm baby. But the best thing that you can do to support your new baby's oxygenation is to fight for a birth that keeps your baby, firstly, not distressed in labor and gently pushing out your baby, offering immediate skin-to-skin contact and warm with dry towels and keeping the cord intact. So if you can prevent your baby being removed from you in the immediate times post-birth, your baby's got a better chance of adjusting to life and adapting good oxygenation and respiration. The best resus and respiration support for newborns is keeping their cord intact till they're finished getting their full blood volume and the warmth of their mamas. So resus can be done with the cord intact with the baby close to the mum. And I know that this can be challenging in hospitals because the healthcare providers aren't always comfortable with that. But that's certainly, if I ever need to give a baby some respiration or respiratory attention or assistance, it's always done with the cord attached with the mum there, but that's what I'm set up to do. This can be a bit challenging if you're in hospital because it's limited by the willingness of the practitioner, the hospital policy, and the equipment that they have. Sometimes their equipment is attached to the wall on the other side of the room, and so in their minds, they can't give your baby assistance at the bedside because the equipment that they need is nowhere near your bedside. So this is a real limitation if you've had your baby in hospital. At home, we can resuscitate the woman's side because all the equipment is mobile. And there is great research for the short and long-term benefits of delayed cord clamping for late preterm infants. So babies at any gestation benefit from being attached to their placenta until they don't need it anymore. And maternity care practices have started catching up with full-term babies, but they need to catch up with this and make efforts to create an environment and a resuscitation process that facilitates this being done with the cord intact. And there are also a number of research papers in the resource folders. So if you're on the mailing list for this podcast, then you get access to the resource folders and all of the research that I use to create each episode. And so if this particular thing is of interest to you, this delayed cord clamping for late preterm infants, then you can go into that resource folder and have a look at the actual papers. And one of those papers demonstrated that oxygen saturation reached normal levels faster for babies who have not had their cord cut and clamped before they're finished with it. And considering that oxygenation is a potential difficulty for these early babies and establishing respiration can be a challenge, this is an easy thing that can be done to help with that. And certainly when I had my little one at home, we were very slow in cutting the cord. In fact, the placenta was born before we cut the cord, so it was attached for quite a long time. So immediately after the birth, you know if your baby is adequately oxygenating and breathing. If firstly they cry and breathe at birth at first and they don't need assistance with that, then you've already overcome the first hurdle. And our guy did that. He was born, cried, he was very pink, and his breathing was obviously not labored or not noisy, so there was no sign of respiratory distress. So if we very briefly talk about signs of respiratory distress, or that your baby's making respiratory effort more so than they need to. So the way that you can identify if a baby is struggling to breathe or to oxygenate, your care provider might have an oxygen saturation monitor, which they can put on your baby, but that's a clinical way of determining it. If you're just looking at your baby and the baby's not attached to any cords, so have a look at your baby. If your baby is vigorous and responsive and gets very cranky with you when you change its nappy and it's non-compliant, so we want cranky, non-compliant babies who fight you when you try and change their nappies and change their clothes, and if they get cold or if they move away from their mum and they get super cranky and they cry, then that's a good sign that your baby's actually got energy to offer to that activity and they're not focused on lending their energy to their basic bodily functions. So if you're looking at your baby and your baby's pink and vigorous like that and gets cranky when you do basic care, then you know that your baby is non-compliant, and that is good. What you don't want to see is a compliant baby. Now, a compliant baby means that, some people say, the baby's really chilled out. Just lets us do whatever we want. So we change the baby and the baby's not fussed, and the baby gets put down and it's not fussed, and it's just kind of difficult to rouse your baby. Your baby might be showing signs that it's conserving its energy to do other basic survival things like breathing. So that's one thing to look for. The next thing to look for is the baby's nose. And if they're doing something called nasal flaring, so it literally looks like they're opening up their nostrils every time they take a breath in, their nostrils are flaring, that's one sign that your baby's working harder than it needs to get oxygen in. The other thing that you can look for, so if you go to your collarbone and in the middle there's two little knobby bits, and then if you sink your finger into the middle of that knobby bit, there's kind of a little dip in between the two knobbly bits of your collarbone. And if the baby's taking a breath in and that little sinky bit is really sucking in quite dramatically, then that can be a sign that your baby's working really hard to draw air into their lungs. The next thing you can do is keep looking down into your baby's chest. When they breathe in, it's something called intercostal recession. So basically the muscles in between the ribs are really drawing in quite dramatically. And again, it just is a sign that your baby's working very hard to suck air into its lungs. And the other thing that sometimes can happen is seesawing between the baby's chest and stomach. And that's a sign that the diaphragm's working really, really hard. So if the chest and stomach are seesawing during breathing, or there's really pronounced sucking in under the ribs, then it's possible your baby's working harder than it needs to, or it's signs of increased respiratory effort. The other thing that it can have a sound. So your baby might sound like a and that is sometimes your baby exhibiting just signs of tiredness with breathing. So noisy breathing can be a sign of respiratory distress. The other thing you can do is count the breaths. So you can either count the in or the out breath. And a normal respiratory rate for a baby is between 40 and 60 breaths a minute. Now be aware, when you're looking at babies breathing, it's not rhythmical like a full-grown adult. They have gaps, so they'll take 10 breaths and then they'll stop, and you'll look at them and they're not breathing, and then all of a sudden they'll start breathing again. That's pretty normal breathing pattern. So count for a whole minute the in or the out breath. Don't count in and out. And if it's between 40 and 60, that's a normal breathing rate. A baby who's really struggling to get oxygen in will often increase their breathing rate in order to try and get more oxygen in. As they get tired, though, sometimes their breath rate can reduce, basically because they're just running out of energy. So that's a very quick rundown of signs that your baby's making more respiratory effort than it should be, that it's basically working hard to breathe. So if you're at home and you notice those kinds of things, or if you're at hospital and you notice those kinds of things, it is time to alert somebody that you think your baby might be having trouble breathing. And for a baby who's struggling to breathe, the next thing that usually happens is they, yes, as I said, become compliant. So if your baby is seeking a feed, that's a good sign. Then you know that they have the energy for that. If they don't go to the breast or are readily rousable for their first feed, then this is another sign, and the first sign that they're focusing on their basic bodily functions and that they can't put energy into feeding. And this is why reluctance to feed is a red flag with late preterm babies, because it points to the possibility that your baby is busy doing something else, a basic life support need, and is not interested in feeding. So if your term baby is alert to feed, this is usually a great sign that they're also oxygenating efficiently and that they're not struggling to adapt to life. So if they're non-compliant, so they get cranky easily and they're alert to feed, then these are two good signs that your baby is probably also oxygenating efficiently. Now, simultaneously with ensuring your baby is oxygenated well and breathing well, the next most important and kind of simultaneous thing that needs to happen is that you don't let your little babe get cold. So late preterm babies have not really had the time to lay down the extra fatty layers that full-term babies would use for energy and thermoregulation. So they're really dependent on their parents to keep them warm. And if they get cold, it can be harder for them to get back to being warm. It takes energy and effort. And so this can be at the detriment to their capacity to maintain their blood sugar and ultimately to maintain their breathing efforts. So this can make them more compliant if they get cold, because they're reserving their energies for something else, or they're putting their energy into trying to warm up. So to keep them warm, the best place for your late preterm babe is skin to skin with you, the mum, or with someone else. Either parent is great, but initially in the first day, if it can be with the mama, that would be amazing, because this is going to increase the opportunity for success at breastfeeding if that's what you're planning to do. So initially at birth, dry them off, heat the room, so turn off any fans and close any windows. You want to kind of feel pretty warm in that birth space. And if you can pop a warm pack under the blankets with you and the baby and keep the baby on your skin and both of you covered with warm blankets and towels, That's going to help your baby maintain its body temperature. So the immediate post-birth needs, so I'm talking like the first 5 minutes of your preterm baby's life, don't cut the cord. If the baby needs assistance, have it done at the bedside as long as possible and potentially discuss this early with your care providers. The baby will most likely not require assistance, and in the case that it doesn't, then you've got lots of reasons to bring the baby skin to skin, dry them off and keep them warm. And that's all for the first 5 minutes. Good job, mama. That's it. And the challenges, though, that you might come up against here is if you're in hospital, is that they will want to have a pediatrician in the room. And as I said before, the machine that they use to lay the babies on to assess them, but they've got a heater, an overhead heater, a warmer, and all the tools that make the pediatrician comfortable. So on that station, on that resus station and checking station, they can check the baby's oxygen levels, they can do a full visual check. Sometimes they can give oxygen there if they need to, and they feel comfortable because the baby's there under the heat lamp. So you might ask that the pediatrician waits outside and only gets called in if they're needed. And this can improve your chances of keeping your baby with you and avoid routine removal of the baby. So you kind of want to avoid the routine management and removal and checking of a preterm baby for a little bit of time. I'm not saying avoid a pediatrician altogether. It can be nice to have your baby checked over, but not in that immediate postpartum period in the first 5 minutes where you still want to keep your baby warm and enjoy your baby and relish in what you've just done in giving birth and allow the baby some time to adjust. So that's been the needs of your preterm baby in the first 5 minutes of life. So what now? So let's talk about your baby's needs now in the first few hours after birth. So we've already talked about keeping your baby warm and the need for it to be well oxygenated and how to identify if the baby is not well oxygenated. So now is where we talk about their blood sugar levels. So we're going to do the sweet part of the warm, pink and sweet plan for your preterm baby. So this is about maintaining the baby's blood sugar levels. And babies that are full term have got a fat layers that they can use for energy, and they come with a packed lunch. They actually have a lot of energy and fluid to get them through until your milk comes fully in. And this obviously is a different situation if you're planning on supplementary feeding with formula or if you're doing express breast milk. So the sweet part is about making sure that your baby can maintain their blood sugar levels. One thing with late preterm babies is not all of them have got their suckling reflex, which is a later reflex that develops at later gestations. So I was very, very fortunate that my little guy had a suck reflex. He latched to the breast and was able to suckle. I did give him 1 mil of expressed breast milk a little bit, probably 3 hours after he was born. So he was born, latched to the breast and fed really well. And I'd committed then to feeding him about every hour and a half at least. And this was something my midwife and I spoke about. And I knew that if his blood sugar dropped, that he wouldn't have the vigor that he needed to also maintain his temperature and be able to maintain his respiration, especially because he was 2.3 kilos. The only energy he had was whatever he was getting from my breast milk, and I kept him skin to skin so I knew he was warm, and that also can help regulate their breathing. And so the important thing after you know that your baby's kept warm and is breathing well is to ensure that you feed your baby as soon as you possibly can after birth. Now, this might mean hand expressing some colostrum into a syringe and offering that as an initial feed if your baby's not vigorous to feed. And what might also happen is that, well, what I can almost guarantee will happen is that the staff at the hospital are going to want to do a blood sugar level check on your baby. And each hospital has different levels for what is an appropriate blood sugar level. So it depends on where you are and the policy is about what they'll be happy with. But if you can offer a breast milk feed or a formula feed or expressed breast milk before they do that blood sugar level test, then your baby's got a better chance of having a good blood sugar level. So you could potentially ask that they delay that blood sugar check until after the baby's first feed. And then the trick after that is to maintain frequent feeds for your little babe. Every baby will need different length feeds and different timing between them. And while we can normally rely on a full-term well baby to wake when it's ready for a feed, you can't always rely on early preterm babies to wake when they're hungry. And so if your baby goes longer than, I mean, it depends. I really didn't want my baby to go longer than 2 hours without a feed because he was so little, but then also sleeping time is growing time. So it's a fine balance between waking them to feed them. And also if the babies aren't in a state to feed, they're just not going to latch. So this is a bit of experimentation with what your baby will tolerate, how their blood sugar levels are going, if they're latching to the breasts, and if they're vigorous and they're actually a well early preterm baby. So for me, I was very fortunate that my baby, when I woke him, he would readily latch to the breast and he was getting enough. I didn't check his blood sugar levels, but I could see from his behavior that he was waking, that he was suckling, you know, that he was non-compliant, he was well oxygenated, all his respiration readings, you know, that was all normal, and he was maintaining his temperature. So that was a good sign with all the other things well, and he was vigorous, that I didn't need to check his blood sugar levels. So that was a fortunate situation. But this poor feeding is what can leave preterm babies struggling a little bit, and what sometimes has them admitted into special care nurseries or supplementary feeding or nasogastric feeding. So while I can't give the solution to all the feeding problems for late preterm babies, if you're caring for a late preterm baby at home, warm, pink, and sweet is the trick. And this sweet part kind of has so many variations for what might happen that you need to really read your baby's individual situation in order to know exactly what to do for your baby. So now we're going to talk about what your preterm baby will need in the coming days and weeks and potentially months after birth. And there's some amazing research about something called kangaroo care. And if you've never heard of this, even a quick Google will give you a rundown of what kangaroo care is. But essentially, it's offering care with your baby skin to skin and wrapped close to you. So kangaroo care, it's like having them in a pouch, literally keeping your baby close to you, either the mum or dad or both, either parent. And there's been big studies on this. In fact, there was a new study released in 2023, which was just last year, and it was a systematic review and a meta-analysis. So they put together all of the papers they could possibly find about kangaroo care for preterm and low birth weight infants. So my little guy was both preterm and low birth weight. And one thing that we did with him was he was almost constantly on an adult, myself or my husband, including for sleep. We kept him really close by. And the benefits of kangaroo care, they have shown that babies have, they can sustain better respiration and oxygenation. Their blood sugar levels can stay more stable and they can maintain their temperature, which is exactly what we're aiming for with preterm babies and with low birth weight babies. And so this particular study, you can again find it in the resource folder. They looked at 31 trials and it included over 15,000 infants. And what they found is that in the first 28 days, mortality rates for low birth weight and preterm babies were reduced by the use of kangaroo care. And this updated review suggests that kangaroo care should preferably be initiated within 24 hours of birth and provided for at least 8 hours daily. So kangaroo care is an evidence-based strategy to improve the outcomes for low birth weight and preterm babies. So far for your late preterm baby, we are focusing on strategies to keep them well during labor, immediate skin to skin, delayed cord clamping, keeping them cozy and warm, and hoping that they initiate feeding but then using feeding to maintain stable blood sugar levels. Kangaroo Care. So you can do this in, I ended up buying a stretchy wrap, and I would wear the stretchy wrap like a shirt, and then I put my baby in there for the day. Now, the next thing is late preterm babies can be prone to jaundice. So if you're in hospital, they will manage jaundice in a hospital way. So that will either be to put the baby under lights in special care, or sometimes you can have a billy blanket, which means that they can treat the jaundice by the bedside. But if you've already taken your preterm baby home because your baby's doing fine otherwise, and you start experiencing the baby having jaundice at home, there are things you can do to firstly prevent that, but then also to manage it. And there's, again, if you really want to see the research on this, head to the resource folder. But there was a randomized trial of phototherapy done with filtered sunlight instead of lights. And this research is coming out of less developed countries where maybe things like billy beds and these phototherapy, conventional phototherapies, aren't available. And so we need to think of other ways to do it. So sunlight has the capacity to work in the same way as phototherapy does for jaundiced babies. The only issue is that you can make them prone to sunburn. And so you've got to be super careful that you avoid times of the day where the sun's highest. So aim for earlier in the morning, later in the evening. The other concern is that if it's a cool day, that your early preterm babe could get a bit cold. So choose a warmer day if you possibly can. Or you could also put the baby on a little heat pack if you're going outside and it's a bit cooler. But we just did, you know, you've got to kind of feel it with your skin how hot the sun is. But we did varied sun exposure for our little guy. And the thing with jaundice is that if the baby is behaving well and normal and feeding as usual and is not lethargic and hasn't become compliant and seems otherwise well, it's probably safe to continue caring for your baby at home like that. But I would suggest if your baby starts to appear jaundiced, there are tests that you can do, and you would engage with your healthcare provider with this on if the jaundice levels are rising too high. So there are jaundice levels that can get too high, but your baby would be particularly unwell in those circumstances. So for us, when we were looking after our preterm baby at home, it was obvious that in all other areas he was well, he was jaundiced, but we managed that with sun exposure through the day. Not a lot. Like, I would say maybe 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the afternoon when the sun wasn't so hot. Both sides, flipped him over like a little pancake. And we managed it that way. And he was still feeding and eating and pooing and weeing. And so we felt really confident to continue with that. The only thing that they found, so with these studies, is that there is a risk of the babies getting too hot. So if you're concerned that your baby's overheating in the sun, you can take their temperature and make sure that you can sort of bring them back in if they seem to be getting too hot. But the conclusions for this study were that filtered sunlight was not inferior to conventional phototherapy for the treatment of neonatal hyperbilirubinemia, which is jaundice babies, and did not result in any study withdrawals for reasons of safety. And so basically they're saying it's just as effective. There you go. It's possible to treat jaundice with sunlight. Obviously, we need to be careful of sunburn and not overheating our little babes. But with those cautions, if you find that your preterm baby is getting a little bit yellow, obviously engage with your healthcare provider, but also there is a possibility of using sunlight as a preventative and a treatment strategy. And you can read these papers in the resource folder. And I hope that's given you some insight into the special needs and particular care strategies that can be applied for late preterm babies. Obviously, there is so much more that I could tell you about this, but we can't fill it all in this episode. If you'd like to discuss this further and ask some questions about this podcast episode, consider joining the Premium Members Hub, which has the opportunity to ask me questions and discuss these episodes further, and Q&A podcast episode. And so if you want to go deeper into these topics, you can join the mailing list, get the resources, or join us in the Premium Members Hub. All the details are in the show notes below, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Great Birth Rebellion.